but that's the old me. Shouting out, I'm out with the throwdown, 'cause I don't care anymore, said I don't care.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Cooking with Cats and Dogs. We're going to share all our greatest recipes for you to take those household pets and make them a wonderful meal this week. No, I'm kidding. But is that just the craziest stuff you've ever heard in your entire life? You're actually listening to Go Pensacola. My name is Julio Diaz. I am your host. Hope you're having a great day, whether you are listening live on Saturday here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, or listening whenever you choose to do so on the podcast version of the show, which you can get anywhere you get your podcasts. Check us out either way. We promise that's all the politics we're going to get into, but I mean, that goes beyond politics. It is the meme of the internet culture of the last few days, and I don't think it's going away anytime soon. Joining me to discuss this and everything else that's going on in entertainment and pop culture, please welcome from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
You know, we're going to be talking about the Emmys today, and while we're on the topic of animals, and it wasn't in the eligibility period, but of all of the things I've seen this year, Chimp Crazy has got to be at the top of the list for, like, best docuseries. It is
Yeah, that'll be eligible next year. That'll be eligible next year.
Instead of pets getting eaten, pets are eating people, so... You know, it's just a kind of circle of life kind of situation. But anyways, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about the Emmys. Thank you all for being here and checking us out. You can check us out on podcasts, anywhere you get your podcasts available. So go ahead and add this to your RSS feed. We're also going to be talking a little bit about Beetlejuice. It was one of the bigger movies that came out this year. And got a couple other things we want to dive into as well. But before we get started, we had kind of discussed something for the intro. Julio, take it away.
Well, I just wanted to follow up on last week's show. We talked a lot about Linkin Park relaunching over the last week or two with a brand new singer. And of course, right after we recorded the show, people on the internet with nothing to do went and dug into her background and found stuff to get angry about. Now
she's a milkshake duck.
You justify to yourself whether or not you think it's worth getting upset about. But there were some accusations, which at this point, as far as I know, are just accusations, that she is somehow involved in the Church of Scientology. She has not at any point confirmed or denied that she has had any involvement with Scientology. This is based on a dude from the Mars Volta.
Love that band. Who
himself is a former Scientologist, and he and his wife left the church. And, he's become one of these Leah Remini-type crusaders against the Church of Scientology, which is great. I'm not knocking that at all, but he's clearly got an axe to grind. And he also put out there, well, she supported Danny Masterson. Danny Masterson, as we all know, was the actor who was a well-heeled Scientologist that was accused of assaulting several women and convicted of assaulting at least one of them. I'm not sure how many convictions it actually was. She put out a statement basically saying, look, I was asked to support somebody who I thought was a friend. I went to one pretrial hearing. I quickly realized that I made a mistake and I haven't associated with this guy ever since. And I think that that's understandable. I think that, you know, you hear that your buddy is being accused of something. You think that he's the kind of person that wouldn't do that kind of thing. You're going to stand by your buddy. And then when you realize you're wrong, hopefully you're going to, change your opinion and distance yourself from that person. So I don't think that part's unreasonable. What do you think, Jeremy?
I mean, who among us hasn't at one point in our life defended a friend that turned out to be a real R word? You know what I mean? And I think that that's just something, like you said, we can all grow. I feel like this is just typical interneting. Like I said, she's a milkshake duck where, everybody loves milkshake duck. He drinks milkshakes 5 seconds later. Turns out milkshake duck was a racist. And I really do think that if we don't allow people the grace to grow and evolve, like, what is it that we expect from people other than to just be able to contribute to the internet ecosystem by having the most immediate reactionary hottest take of everybody and say she's a defender of assault and she's a terrible person because she was a member of a cult, and then she came out and released a very measured response. I agree with you. It's like, if we can't take people at their word, give them the benefit of the doubt, and understand that, you know, maybe she made a mistake and realized the error of her ways afterwards.
And Milkshake Duck does sound like a delightful pet recipe also. All right. I promise that's the last time I'm going back to that in this show.
I don't believe you.
Just bonkers. It's also been out there in the media not that I want to spend a whole bunch of time talking about Linkin Park again, but Chester Bennington's son, of course, is none too happy about all of this.
Oh, I heard about that. And he has every right to not be happy about it.
I mean, yes and no. I think that he has a right to have an opinion, and I think that he has a right to feel like he's going to defend his father's legacy. But I don't think it's fair for him to say, hey, this band can't go on.
No, totally. No, both things can be true. And I think in this situation, both things are true. In the same way that the guy from Mars Volta, whose name is escaping me, probably has a raw nerve about this person who defended a person who may or may not have victimized his wife.
Yeah.
I think it's reasonable to understand when you're this close in proximity to something, emotions are going to run high. And I think Chester Bennington's kid is probably grappling with so many complex emotions and not knowing exactly how to channel that other than to go to the internet and kind of vent into the wild. It's like, it's very human. I empathize with him deeply, even though I don't agree with his take on it, you know?
There's one more thing that's come up in the music world that I want to bring up. I just heard this in the last few minutes before we went on the air, in fact. The rumor around town is, not just around town, but around the world, I guess, the Warped Tour might be coming back.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, 30th anniversary next year. So there is a rumor that they're going to revive it for the 30th anniversary. So you'd be on board with this?
Yeah, other than the fact that I just now found out that the Warped Tour is racist. Sorry to all of the fans out there. Turns out your favorite concert is problematic.
There's actually a movie out this week called Am I Racist? And to me, it's like, if you ask the question, if you're asking the question, the answer is yes.
If you're listening to this program, actually, the answer is yes. Sorry, everyone. You're all guilty of of being a racist. Thank you very much for checking out this episode of the show.
Yeah. Now we have no listeners. Thanks. Thanks for that, Jeremy. I mean, I don't know. The there is some consternation about the possibility of the Warped Tour coming back because the rumor is that Live Nation is involved. And people are worried that basically it's going to be, you know, a $300 ticket. The When We Were Young festival that they've been doing the past couple of years out in Vegas, where they have 900 emo bands on one bill playing in within a 4-hour span. So you can see like five of them maybe for 5 minutes each. So, I mean, I understand that concern. I would hope that if they're going to actually bring the Warped Tour brand back, that they're going to kind of connect with those ethos again and have it be like the Warped Tours of old. But look at what Lollapalooza is now compared to what it was.
Yeah, it's all shameful.
So, Lollapalooza was, when it started, was, you know, an alternative music festival, and it, you know, brought together like underground kinds of music, and it went on this tour around the country. Now it is a stationary festival in Chicago, and you get people like Ariana Grande headlining it. And no disrespect to Ariana Grande. She's got a beautiful voice, very talented person. What is Ariana Grande an alternative to?
Who do you want to see on Warped Tour?
You know, I don't know, man. But I'm interested to see what comes of it. We got to take a break. We'll be back in the morning in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. Jeremy, we've got the Emmys coming up on Sunday, the big show. We've got the hosts this year are going to be Eugene Levy and his son, whose name just went out of my head. What is it, Eugene Levy's son's
Bob
name?
Bob Levy?
No, it's not Bob Levy.
Jack Levy.
Are you serious? The guy from Schitt's Creek. They're both from Schitt's Creek.
No, I can't think of his name right now either.
Oh, why has his name gone out of my head? That's going to drive me
Daniel?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's it. Daniel Levy. Thank you. Anyway, the two of them are going to be the hosts of the Big Emmy Awards celebration this Sunday. We've had a bunch of the off-broadcast awards were given out last weekend. So we get into this weekend, it's going to be like all the big nominations. It's going to be the best series in comedy, drama, miniseries, et cetera. It's going to be the best actors, best actresses, best supporting actors and supporting actresses and all that kind of stuff. So kind of wanted to just kind of run through what's coming up on the big show on Sunday and maybe give some thoughts and predictions, if you will, for what we might be able to expect on Sunday. So we'll just start right at the top. We're not going to do any of this holding the big award till the end of the show kind of thing, because they'll do that on Sunday. So anyway, best drama nominees are going to be Shogun, The Crown, The Morning Show, The Gilded Age, Slow Horses, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Fallout, and The Three-Body Problem.
Okay.
Now, I will just straight out of the gate say, man, I've been meaning to get around to watch a lot of these shows. I the only one I've seen is Fallout.
Yeah, it's wild. You know, we were talking before we started recording about how things are just all over the place now in regard to where you actually go to watch them. So while I am familiar with most of these shows, I saw a couple episodes of Three-Body Problem, which is Dan and Dave from Game of Thrones' new series on Netflix, and it was all right. And I did see Shogun, and I have a feeling Shogun's going to win it. And that's not saying it should, because, again, I haven't seen all of these, but I saw Fallout. But, yeah, I feel like Shogun's going to win. Julio, what do you think?
I thought you said you saw Mr. and Mrs. Smith also.
I saw a bit of it. I didn't finish it either. Yeah, you're right.
Okay. So you got a couple you haven't finished and then a couple that... I mean, I kind of feel like the battle here is between Shogun and The Crown, with it being the last season of The Crown. The Crown has won a lot of awards already. We may see where they're giving it one more on the way out the door. But Shogun was very praised. It was nominated for, I think, the most awards. It won a bunch in the pre-show awards that were given out last week, including one for Nestor Carbonell, who's been here in Pensacola as a Pensacon guest, and we've had on this show, as a matter of fact. So that was cool to see. That's one I've been meaning to get around to that I haven't gotten around to. I've been meaning to get around to Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I've been meaning to get around to Three-Body Problem. I had to remind myself what Slow Horses was.
Yeah, same.
Like, to me, that's like the lowest profile one here. There's a part of me that would love to see Fallout win this, but it's not going to happen. But my feeling is that Shogun is going to win it.
Yeah. Let's move on to outstanding lead actor in drama series.
Okay. All right. Lead actor in drama series. You've got Donald Glover for Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Idris Elba for Hijack, Walton Goggins for Fallout, Gary Oldman for Slow Horses, Hiroyuki Sanada for Shogun, and Dominic West for The Crown. So,
Hiroyuki Sanada.
I mean, that's what I'm thinking. Again, there's a part of me that would love to see Walton Goggins win this. First of all, he's amazing in Fallout. And second of all, he's amazing.
Very good.
He's amazing in general, and I don't think he's ever been nominated. Dude probably deserves an award going back at least to The Shield, if not before that.
Yeah.
So I would dearly love to see Walton Goggins win it. I don't think Idris Elba is going to win for a show that's not really up for much of anything else. I'm a big fan of everybody in this category, though, especially Donald Glover and Gary Oldman. I don't know that Gary Oldman has an Emmy. He's got an Oscar. I know that. I'm not sure that he has an Emmy, and I feel like that might be a possibility. And then there's a lot of praise for Dominic West in The Crown, too, so that might also be a possibility. But
ABC seems to think Gary Oldman should win for Slow Horses, but Julio and I both just haven't seen it to speak on that. But yeah, Gary Oldman super fond of it as well.
Yeah, but I do think Hiroyuki Sanada is probably going to win it for Shogun. I think that's I don't know that it's a lock, but I think it's close to a lock. If we're going to go ahead and move on to Best Actress in a Drama, we've got Anna Sawai for Shogun. Not Shotgun, that's a different show. Jennifer Aniston for The Morning Show, Reese Witherspoon for The Morning Show, Imelda Staunton for The Crown, Maya Erskine for Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and Carrie Coon for The Gilded Age. Again, group of heavyweight actors. It's nice to see some diversity in the category, too. We have a couple of Asian actresses in this category, so that's nice. I kind of feel like Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon cancel each other out. I mean, I know The Morning Show is very praised, but it's also one of those shows that seems to get a lot of nominations and then doesn't win a lot.
Mm.
I feel like this comes down to Anna Sawai versus Imelda Staunton.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen a little bit of The Gilded Age also. My wife is a fan. Carrie Coon is reliably good always. Anna Sawai, though, like, she's so good in Shogun, and if Sanada, is that his name? Sanada should be nominated or win for his performance in Shogun. I think she is easily the standout of the series, and we both liked her in Godzilla on what was it called? Monster Island or whatever on Apple Plus.
Oh, well. A Monarch Legacy of Monsters, I think was the actual title of the show, if I'm remembering correctly.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, let's move on to comedy. We may come back to the supporting drama actors later, but we want to try to get in as much as we can. Best comedy series nominees are Abbott Elementary, The Bear, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Hacks, Only Murders in the Building, Palm Royale, Reservation Dogs, and What We Do in the Shadows. Now, I have seen many more of these than I have of the dramas, but not all of them. It's interesting that Abbott Elementary seems to continue to be the one traditional broadcast series that seems to even get nominated for anything anymore. Basically, if you're on broadcast, you're not even in consideration anymore, except for Abbott Elementary. I have seen some episodes of Abbott Elementary. I think it's a really good show.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be my pick out of these categories. Now, that being said, it kind of doesn't matter what my pick is, because what's going to win is going to be The Bear.
And I echo what you said about Abbott Elementary. I've been watching it casually, and it's a very watchable and enjoyable show. I haven't seen many of these. That's Res Dogs, What We Do in the Shadows, Curb Your Enthusiasm. I haven't seen all of Curb, but The Bear. And, bias really is going to come into play in this one. I think The Bear is probably the greatest comedy / drama series of all time. So yeah, give it to The Bear. Season 2 is the peak of the show, 3 seasons in.
See, I would, if it was up to me of which one I'm going to give it to, it's going to be Reservation Dogs.
Yeah, I get that.
Because of what this show meant and what it stood for. And the fact that this is the first time it's even been nominated for its final season. It kills me that the show's not going to get the recognition that it deserves. I know it's not going to win.
It was incredible.
I also am a huge fan of Only Murders in the Building, and I'm a huge fan of What We Do in the Shadows. And I think if both of those shows end without winning the Best Comedy Award, that there should be some kind of storming of the Academy. But that being said, we just started a brand new season of Only Murders in the Building, and they've already said they're going to go one more after that. So there's time for Only Murders in the Building. What We Do in the Shadows, getting ready to debut its final season. So there's going to be at least one more season for that to win too. So fingers crossed.
Not the case for Curb or Reservation Dogs, unfortunately.
No. And that's its own interesting thing. So on that note, let's go ahead and move on to Best Actor in a Comedy. Nominees there: Matt Berry for What We Do in the Shadows, Steve Martin for Only Murders in the Building, Larry David for Curb Your Enthusiasm, Martin Short for Only Murders in the Building, Jeremy Allen White for The Bear, and Defero Wunatai for Reservation Dogs. Now, that was the big surprise nomination for me out of this category, was seeing some recognition for Defero Wunatai. That was really cool. But again, kind of doesn't matter. Jeremy Allen White's going to win this.
Least funny performance in the entire lineup, but one of the most amazing performances I've ever seen. And again, season two is the height of that. He will win, and it is weird where I'm saying, you know, as far as this category goes, the Bear might not should be the winner, but as far as, you know, performance and quality, I think the Bear is going to take it home.
What do you think about the fact that we're going to end like 900 years of Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David not winning?
It's so very Larry David. Like, I love it because it is so true to the man himself. He is adored and by generations of people. I don't think that this is one of those cases where it's fitting. I feel like there's also the case with the character of Saul Goodman portrayed by Bob Odenkirk, where like it's just it's true to the character. So here we are.
Steve Carell never won for Michael Scott on The Office.
Crazy.
You know, Amy Poehler never won for Leslie Knope on Parks and Rec. So this is going to be another one of those. That being said, person I would give this to is Matt Berry for What We Do in the Shadows. There is nobody funnier on television. Period.
Like, he's great. And Toast also. Toast of Tinseltown, Toast of London. Highly recommend those if you haven't checked them out, folks.
Yeah, I kind of don't want to dig too much further because we're almost out of time in this segment. But so before we move on to another category, I just want to say also, it's that same weird situation where Steve Martin and Martin Short really seem to cancel each other out. And they're both brilliant in Only Murders in the Building as well. And I would like to see at some point that both of them to get recognized for that show. I don't know how it happens. I know there's been other situations over the years where these kinds of things have happened, and eventually, like all four of the Golden Girls eventually won, if I recall correctly, despite being nominated against each other. So maybe we see that situation in the future as well. We got to take a break. Back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, and we are talking about the Emmy Awards, which are coming up this Sunday with the broadcast on ABC. We were going through the nominees in the comedy category, and we are up to Best Actress in a Comedy. Nominees here are Jean Smart in Hacks, Ayo Edebiri for The Bear, Quinta Brunson for Abbott Elementary, Kristen Wiig for Palm Royale, Selena Gomez for Only Murders in the Building, and Maya Rudolph for Loot. First of all, very, very pleased to see Selena Gomez get recognized this year. That it's been a matter of controversy that she's been kind of snubbed for this nomination the past couple of years while her male co-stars have been nominated. So very, very pleased to see that recognition. She's great in Only Murders in the Building. And I would love to see her win this award, which is not going to happen because it's going to go to Ayo Edebiri for The Bear.
Interesting. I again, not having a lot of knowledge of these series, feel like Jean Smart for Hacks might pull this one out. And I don't know why other than just the conversation surrounding it, but we will see what happens.
Jean Smart has won for Hacks before. just for the record. She won a couple of seasons ago.
Interesting.
I love Ayo Edebiri. I have not seen The Bear. I've seen her in a lot of other stuff. I think she's fantastic. And no knock on her when she wins. I'm also a huge fan of basically everybody in this category. You know, Kristen Wiig is brilliant. Maya Rudolph is brilliant. Maya Rudolph is kind of the outlier in this category because, again, it's the one where the actress is nominated, but there's no other real nominations, kind of like the Idris Elba nomination. So,
sure.
I feel like that one's iffy. And then I want to say, did Quinta Brunson win also, or did she win for something else? Because she's also the writer and creator of Abbott Elementary.
She definitely got some Emmy love, but I don't recall what the category was.
Yeah, I want to say it wasn't for acting. I want to say it was for maybe for writing or something like that. Let's move on, though. Best Limited Series, Baby Reindeer, Fargo, Lessons in Chemistry, Ripley, and True Detective Night Country. Now, I got to admit, I have not seen any of these. I know all the buzz is on Baby Reindeer, but I also know that there's a lot of controversy around Baby Reindeer that might prevent it from winning anything.
Yeah.
There's the whole thing about this being somewhat based on a true story, and the person who is the stalker in that story is suing Netflix over it, and maybe that thing where they want to stay away from that. I have heard a lot of great things about every show in this category, actually, but I haven't seen it, so I can't speak. Now, you're a fan of Fargo, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, I love Fargo. Baby Reindeer, Fargo, True Detective, Night Country, saw all three of them, think they're all great. I think that Fargo is in a league of its own as far as storytelling. Noah Hawley just really nails it as a director. It's got great performances from some of my favorite actors and actresses. It's phenomenal. Baby Reindeer was a cultural phenomenon, not a pleasant watch, no catharsis to be found in that. It is extremely challenging in a lot of the best ways. Your point about it, the controversy, is definitely valid, and I'm curious to see how it comes out in the shake. If it were me, I would pick Fargo, but if Baby Reindeer won it, I would understand because it really was like a zeitgeisty show.
Well, let's move on to the actors and actresses in limited series. It's actually a limited series or TV movie. They give a separate award for the overall project, but when they get into the individual acting awards, they combine those categories. So you're going to hear some things here that you did not hear in the nominations for Best Limited Series, and those situations are going to be actual movies. The movie that did win the award, by the way, because they've already given out that award, was Quiz Lady, which is not nominated in any of the leading actor categories.
Mm-mm.
So Best Actor, a Limited Series or TV movie, you've got Matt Bomer for Fellow Travelers, John Hamm for Fargo, Richard Gadd for Baby Reindeer, Tom Hollander for Feud, Capote versus the Swans, and Andrew Scott for Ripley. Now, again, this is a situation where, like, at my first glance, I would have said that Richard Gadd, being also the creator of Baby Reindeer and the person that this story was supposedly based on his life, you'd think that would be the gimme. But with the controversy, I don't know if that's the gimme.
Yeah, if they're going to be able to slide in an award for them somewhere, I wouldn't be surprised if this was the one. Richard Gadd is incredible in it, and a really nice mix of like sympathetic and somebody that you also are completely repulsed by at different times, and the fact that it's like such a personal kind of project. I think that there's some really interesting stuff about him winning in it, but it does open Pandora's box. I'd give it to Richard Gadd out of the two of these six performances or five performances I've seen.
And I kind of feel like maybe this goes to Matt Bomer, if given the controversy, or possibly Andrew Scott for Ripley, has been very, very praised, and he's a great actor. If you don't know him, you might know that he played Moriarty on Sherlock.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, fantastic actor. So I think that's a possibility as well. Best Actress, limited series or TV movie, Jodie Foster for True Detective Night Country, Brie Larson for Lessons in Chemistry, Juno Temple for Fargo, Sofia Vergara for Griselda, and Naomi Watts for Capote versus the Swans. So right off the bat here, two Oscar winners at the top of this category, Jodie Foster and Brie Larson. Jodie Foster, of course, has won more than once. And then Naomi Watts is a two-time Oscar nominee as well. I believe Sofia Vergara may have an Emmy for Modern Family, if I'm not mistaken. And I want to say Juno Temple at least was nominated for Ted Lasso if she hasn't won. So there's a lot of heavyweights in this category. What are you thinking?
I love Juno Temple, sentimental favorite. Would love to see her win. Jodie Foster does carry so much freaking prestige already. I think she's kind of out because of that. I like all of these actresses very much. I think Sofia Vergara is going to win it.
I kind of feel like it's Jodie Foster is kind of the gimme in this category. Maybe okay. A little bit too much so, but you know, we'll see. Very quickly, we'll go through these very quickly. Supporting actress in a drama: Christine Baranski for The Gilded Age, Elizabeth Debicki in The Crown, Nicole Beharie for The Morning Show, Greta Lee for The Morning Show, Leslie Manville for The Crown, Karen Pittman for The Morning Show, and Holland Taylor for The Morning Show. So if everybody from The Crown and The Morning Show cancel each other out, that means it's Christine Baranski's.
Mm.
But I don't know that that's what happens. I kind of feel like this may go to Elizabeth Debicki for playing Diana in The Crown. Move on to best supporting actor in a drama. I hope I don't fudge this name. Tadanobu Asano for Shogun, Mark Duplass for The Morning Show, Billy Crudup for The Morning Show, who has been the exception to that Morning Show doesn't win rule. He has won before. John Hamm for The Morning Show, Takahiro Hira for Shogun, Jack Lowden for Slow Horses, and Jonathan Pryce for The Crown. So again, this is mostly Shogun versus The Morning Show here. And I don't, I don't know that I have a pick in that category. Again, I feel like maybe it goes to Jonathan Pryce for The Crown. That's entirely a possibility. Supporting actress in a comedy, Cheryl Lee Ralph for Abbott Elementary, who I believe won it last year.
Very funny.
Carol Burnett for Palm Royale, Liza Colon Zayas for The Bear, Hannah Einbender for Hacks, Janelle James for Abbott Elementary, and Meryl Streep for Only Murders in the Building. Heavy heavyweights in this category. Meryl was, you kind of never want to bet against Meryl Streep, but this might be the last chance to give Carol Burnett another Emmy.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I kind of feel like that's going to happen. We saw Dick Van Dyke get one in the pre-show awards. I would not bet against Carol Burnett in this category. Finally, this last one we're going to have time to get to, supporting actor in a comedy, Lionel Boyce for The Bear, Paul W. Downs for Hacks, Emmon Moss Bachrach for The Bear, Paul Rudd for Only Murders in the Building, and Bowen Yang for Saturday Night Live. I mean, I don't want to bet against The Bear, but there's two people in here for The Bear. So which one do you think?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I just feel like Bowen Yang being in there is kind of a strange, like one of these things is not like the other situation. But yeah, it really is kind of a toss-up as to which one from The Bear would win.
I'm not writing off Paul Rudd possibly taking it for Only Murders in the Building either.
That's another reason I need to see that show.
I think there's a strong possibility of that. We got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Forest girl, it ran one step ahead as we followed in the dance. Between the parted pages and were pressed in love's hot fevered iron like a striped pair of pants. MacArthur's Park is melting in the dark. all the sweet green icing flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again. Oh no.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Well, we're going to move on from the Emmys now. We'll see how the Emmys turn out on Sunday on ABC. We're going to talk about the new movie that I can say the name of, but if I tried to say the word again, we'd have big trouble, and that is Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. If you've been anywhere near anybody that's seen this movie, apparently it is the comedy hit of the decade. People are super excited about this movie. People love it. People think it's the greatest thing since, I don't know, maybe since the original Beetlejuice. I got to tell you, I wish I shared that opinion.
I don't agree that the consensus is that positive. It's got reasonable reviews. It's definitely in the fresh category, but I think the critiques are valid, and I'm not going to put words in your mouth. However, I have heard some of what you said, and we'll elaborate and agree with a lot of what you said. I enjoyed it very, very much. If somebody said this is the Force Awakens of Beetlejuice movies, I would say that that's fair. There's definitely a lot of remember this, remember that scenes in it. But as far as being a vehicle to get us from one creative set piece and sight gag and interesting use of practical effects and stop motion and just like letting us into the weird, irreverent world of Tim Burton, kind of unchained by the whatever crappy story he's been doing for the last 25 years. It was very refreshing to me, and I was shocked by how subversive it was. We'll avoid spoilers right now, but yeah, it was subversive. It was funny. It was gory, and I thought Michael Keaton was phenomenal in it. Very, very positive on this movie, Julio.
See, now you've mentioned a lot of the things that I liked about the movie. I liked the use of the practical effects. I think they looked great. There are a couple of set pieces in the movie, especially the climactic one, which is set to that song that we just played, MacArthur Park, that I think are almost worth the price of admission on their own. Michael Keaton's fantastic. The cast is all very good.
Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah, Catherine O'Hara is great. Everybody's good in it. Here's my biggest problem with this, and it may relate to some of the creative people that are involved in this movie. This movie feels like it's both got too much stuff in it and not enough in it. There's 10 different plots going on, and none of them are served enough. And I'm wondering if this was written by the team of AlphaGo and Miles Millar, or Goff, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, who are primarily TV guys. They are the guys that are behind Wednesday, which Tim Burton worked on, which of course stars Jenna Ortega, who's in this movie. They were also the co-creators of the series Smallville. These are guys who've made their bones on TV.
Sure.
This felt like they had a great idea for a season of Beetlejuice on TV. And they tried to put it all into a 2-hour movie, and it doesn't all fit into a 2-hour movie. So they're not able to tell any of the stories with as much depth as they deserve.
I think that's fair. Who would you say was the antagonist of this movie?
Well, and I mean, that's kind of where things fall down a little bit, because in a Beetlejuice movie, the antagonist should be Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
And
but he became kind of such a cult anti-hero character that they didn't go that way in it.
And then they ended up with, oh, well, Beetlejuice is the bad guy, so we've got to defeat the bad guy. And it's almost not really fair to Beetlejuice, because he, you know, he did what he said he was going to do. And he may be a creep, but he followed through on his word.
Yeah, he was the nice guy in this scenario.
Yeah, so, you know, that's a little iffy. I just think you had this whole plot line with Beetlejuice's former paramour, who's played by
Monica Bellucci.
Monica Bellucci, thank you. Her name has gone out of my head. For those who don't know, Monica Bellucci is in a relationship with Tim Burton, which by law means she has to be in a Tim Burton movie.
Correct. Got her on the set for one day and filmed a bunch of disparate scenes with things that didn't have anything to do with the movie. I totally agree.
If you look at Tim Burton's history, he has a long storied history of whoever he's in a relationship with at the time is in every movie he makes.
There's the Lisa Marie thing in Mars Attacks.
Started with Lisa Marie. She's in several of his movies, not just Mars Attacks, but for the entire length of their relationship. To the point where they overlap, Planet of the Apes is where he met Helena Bonham Carter. And Helena Bonham Carter and Lisa Marie are both in that movie. And then he kicks Lisa Marie to the curb. And that's why Helena Bonham Carter's in like every movie for years that he did.
Scandalous.
Because they were in a relationship. And now they've split up and now he's with Monica Bellucci. So I guess we can look forward to every Tim Burton movie having Monica Bellucci in it. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing that Helena Bonham Carter was in all his movies. I'm not even saying it was a bad thing that Lisa Marie was in all of his movies. I'm just saying it's a thing. And
it feels like that's why
she's there. Like, there could have been a great plot about this whole like death cult that she was a part of, and that they, you know, their pursuit of Beetlejuice, and they could have been involved with the Dietz family and the whole nine yards. And they didn't go that route. And they just had her in scenes by herself through, you know, every 20 minutes in the movie, and then her showing up at the end of the movie.
Where does this fall in Tim Burton's filmography to you? Not rank it, but is it in the top or the bottom? Right smack in the middle? How do you feel about that?
I think it's probably right smack in the middle, whereas the original Beetlejuice is at the top.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I do feel like this is his best film in 20 years. I will say that.
No, I can't agree with that at all.
Big
Eyes is better. Big Eyes is hugely underrated.
It's because it stinks.
I disagree with that. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I did.
No, Big Eyes is fantastic.
It's fine.
I would probably put Miss Peregrine above this, or maybe right on par with this. I am a bigger fan of Dumbo than most people. Dumbo, I think the third act of Dumbo is incredibly subversive. And,
it was.
And I'm kind of a dark horse fan of that. That being said, there's been a lot of iffy stuff in the last 20 years of Burton's career. Now, 20 years is a long time, so we're talking back to 2004.
So Big Fish came out in 2004.
Yeah, so you can't put this over Big Fish.
I might.
I'm not putting it over Sweeney Todd.
Maybe Sweeney Todd. Maybe Sweeney Todd, I will give you that. Big Fish is also very good, but this just felt quintessential. Hey, you remember that Tim Burton guy that you loved back in the 80s and early 90s? Here's the reason why, and I thought it presented that case very, very well, and while I do agree with the majority of what you're saying, it just didn't bother me. I feel like you were more keen on Wednesday than I was, and I'm more keen on Beetlejuice than you were, and I think that's just kind of like the nature of it, you know?
Big Fish, for the record, is 2003, so you get a pass on that.
All right, there we go.
Corpse Bride, however, was 2005. I would probably put Corpse Bride above this. You know, Frankenweenie. You might not want to put animated stuff in the same category. I get that, but yeah, I mean, like, just looking at his filmography for the past 20 years, I put this about halfway down the list.
Okay.
And I put it probably halfway down the list of his overall filmography, because if you're talking about pre 2004, I mean, I think there's only one dud in there, and that's Planet of the Apes. You're talking about this is the hit parade for Tim Burton pre 2004. Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Beetlejuice,
love it.
Batman,
amazing.
Edward Scissorhands,
great.
Batman Returns,
Awesome.
Ed Wood, Mars yep. Attacks, Sleepy Hollow,
mm-hmm.
Planet of the Apes, and yep. Big Fish. I mean, when the worst film out of that bunch is Planet of the Apes, which isn't bad, it's just not great.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, and then you compare that to the Post. You know, we've mentioned a bunch of them, but then in there you've got Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, you've got Alice in Wonderland, you've got Dark Shadows.
Those were all very rough to me. Just like not even, they felt like Tim Burton and Autopilot and messing with CG kind of changed his mojo a little bit. I don't know. Like when you list all those ones from pre-80s and then you even name some good ones in the last 20 years, I do feel like Beetlejuice probably falls a little bit down towards the not best part of his filmography, but I would take this version of Beetlejuice over, I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's in that category of, it's better than Mars Attacks, I think.
I'm definitely not going to agree with that, but I'm glad I've dragged it down to close to my level anyways. we're done for this week. Unfortunately, we are preempted for FSU football next week, so we will see you as soon as we are not preempted for FSU football. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.